All right, guys, welcome to the podcast. This is the Return to Service podcast. I'm your host, Chris, and today I'm joined by Suresh Narayanan. He's the CEO at Jets MRO, and Nathan Winkle, CEO at Thoroughbred Aviation. Guys, thanks for joining me. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Thanks for having us.
No problem. So let's dive into it. Suresh, you and I have been talking back and forth. I've obviously been seeing a lot of your posts, and a big piece is transparency for your customers, making sure they know where they're at, what they're about to get into, you know, quoting out. You take a slightly different approach in a lot of places. And Nathan, I thought that you'd be a great person to kind of give the opposite perspective of just from your background and the knowledge in the industry. And I'll kind of list this off as our talking points, and let's go from here. So a couple of things, Nathan, that you threw out when we were talking before this are, you know, as it relates to MROs, from the customer's perspective, there's a lot of entry-level talent getting tossed into the deep end, the impact that that has on the customer, salespeople selling jobs in the facilities that are at 140% capacity with no real breaks or relief in sight there. Obviously, customers are not thrilled about this, and it's causing some pretty major headaches and even having impact on the quality of pre-buys. So now that I've thrown all of this out there, where do you guys want to start?
Well, I mean, I'll take the first stab at it, and you guys kick the rudder for me left and right to keep the aviation pun going. So first, I'm glad to meet Suresh, and I'm glad to see some new MRO upstarts coming into the industry. You know, we're as a community, we're way behind on capacity. Parking talent is an issue. We're just way behind on capacity. We keep building new airplanes. Airplanes are lasting longer. People are repurposing them. And we're seeing life expectancies of airplanes, you know, that I don't think we ever really intended in all of our business plans, you know, 30, 40 years ago. So, you know, it's good to meet Suresh and learn about what his company's doing. And it's good to see some new MROs, because as I said in my email to you guys before this podcast, I mean, I have run into, Thoroughbred has run into an issue a number of times with our acquisitions and sales aircraft and the couple that we manage for owners. We've ran into a number of issues where, you know, we're sold a job into a facility that is sort of a cottage name in the industry. We show up with the airplane only to find out that there's no way that they can even put the airplane inside and start it, not even on the day, not even the week that we contracted a year ago to show up and do it. There've been no parts procured. There's no pre-planning in place. And we've ran across this more than once. And then in other cases, we've been at places where, again, speaking to capacity here, where we wind up going in and are sold a pre-buy slot, show up with the airplane only to learn that the quality department's so far backed up, they can't produce a records review report, which is an essential part, right? And so the whole transaction's delayed, in some cases up to 30 days for quality to get caught up to the records, or they bring in an outside consultant, which in some cases is better than what the shop has, and in some cases is way below standard. So it's kind of all over the place. So I think that's one of the big things we've seen lately that we're trying to figure out how to you know, provide a better experience for our clients in the MRO world.
Suresh, go ahead.
And I think to Nathan's point, I'll try to keep this concise. And the reason, even though in my past I've been around the commercial and military space, we wanted to be in the business jet space, is because it's so immature compared to the other segments in aviation. But people are operating these aircraft like an airline, but they're not getting the infrastructure and support from MROs like us that they need to do that, when you think of the big operators. And so the transparency piece, I was actually shocked, and maybe it was me being naive in my career. I'm shocked how bad it is and how distrusting customers are as operators with MROs. And I was just an operator, right? I came from an operator of 77 aircraft, and that's where I came up and with the thesis of Jet's MRO, and I saw how bad things were going, and it was shocking, whether it was the OEM or these big major MROs. It's so sales driven that the product and service is not being delivered. Like, it's a huge gap. And it drove me nuts to the point where I don't want to talk to a pure salesperson anymore. And like, I appreciate people that come from the technical background, so that have done the work, grow into sales. And I certainly appreciate folks that know the product technically. And that's kind of how we do things here at Jet's MRO. But there's so much traditional sales out there solely tied to selling more, that you get such a huge gap from what they're selling and what's being delivered, a huge disconnect from production to sales. And things that we've done different at Jet's MRO is no one can quote projects, timeline, or cost at our company except for production, not even me. So our GM and leads quote them. And the thesis behind that is they're the guys doing the work. They're the ones who have to commit to timelines. And so might as well let them tell customers, how long is it really going to take? And that's our best shot of being accurate, because our big thing is on time 7 days a week. But what's going on in the industry is a lot of mad operators. And I've asked a lot of them, especially when I was an operator, how is maintenance going? And not one of them said it's going well. It's a degree of bad. And there's a lot of distrust where they're having to send people on site to make sure their planes are getting work. The communications, I mean, piss poor at best. You know, and it's being managed through the sales process, not through the technical process, so much that there's the opportunity. If it was going well, it'd be hard for me to enter the market, but they're almost making it so easy to improve on these things. It's so obvious what they should be doing. It just hasn't been getting done, at least in the business aviation segment.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. It's funny you said that. The lack of transparency and the fact that people are being, it's a sales driven process. I remember years ago, Suresh, I was on the customer advisory board at one of the OEMs, and I recall we had this like subgroup, and we were working specifically on quoting in the service centers, right? And the experience the customers were having in the service centers. And I never will forget in one of the meetings, I can't recall if it was me or one of my co-board members, but nonetheless, the theme that we were pressing the OEM with was this, and it was exactly what you said, is you guys have sales guys that are doing a great job at selling your service, right? They're going out, they're building the relationships, which y'all will hear me say for as long as you know me, the relationships are the real capital. The rest of it will take care of itself. But they're the ones out building these relationships. But the problem is when the airplane gets dropped off at the service center, now the lead's got to be the bad guy, right? And the most, at least empowered, I should say, not most, the least empowered person in terms of workflow quantity in the facility typically is a lead, right? And so you show up and you get a change order at your input meeting because you asked for, I don't know, a 12-year inspection, and what is quoted is exactly the 12-year, but none of these ancillary tasks that are required to sign off the 12-year, as an example, right? And so the poor lead's got to come to you on day one with a work change request saying, hey, I know that your quote said 100 grand, but it's actually 150, and it's going to be 10 more days than what you were promised on this because I can't do it the way it was sold to you, right? And I can't tell you how many times in my 32 years, or almost 33 years, that's been the case. So it's refreshing to hear that you guys don't do it that way.
The big thing, too, is so the purpose of Jet's MRO is I didn't start the MRO to reinvent maintenance. I just wanted to treat mechanics better so they don't leave. And so I could track really good talent and reduce turnover, because when I was on the operator side, everyone kept blaming our delays from the MROs on labor shortages. When I actually went to investigate, I had 1,200 employees, but I'm like, maintenance is affecting us so bad, I'm going to show up myself, which is not normal, to see what's going on at the MROs. And I found out it was actually mechanic turnover that was killing their operation and our timelines, because they have good mechanics that say that may know our aircraft and take 20 hours to do a task. well, he or she leaves and the new guy comes in that may be licensed but doesn't know the aircraft, takes 40 hours.
Yeah.
Well, not only do I get charged the 40 hours as the operator, but the aircraft's late. And turnover rates were approaching 50%, 50. One out of two mechanics are jumping within a year. And so when I created the business, I wanted to say, if I can fix turnover, attract good mechanics that stay here, the customer's going to get a far better consistent product. And I had to fix turnover. And everyone just goes, oh, just pay them more. And I'm like, well, who's asked the mechanics why they're leaving? If that's right. the reason, great. No one's done that. Leaders just think you pay them more. Well, I went and surveyed 1,000 mechanics. And the four things I got from them were benefits were a big deal for them, schedule, right? Because if there's a shortage and they're getting pushed to work more and they can't go home, they don't get work-life balance, they don't want the forced overtime and getting forced to work weekends, things like that. And then culture and engaged leadership were the other two. So they didn't like their manager or how the sales process worked, where they got stuck with the bag and they're trying to rush to get things done. And so the environment was crappy. And so when I started the business, I said, okay, well, let's give everyone free family benefits. They can have 30 kids or zero. That was easy. That's a financial decision. On the schedule, we staff 7 days a week, day one, so that there's no on-call period. So a mechanic can go home from their shift and be home. And I don't have to call them back or make them work weekends. They just, every day is a normal work day. And I'm still surprised some of the MROs are closing the weekends when that's the busiest time. Because that's 2 days times 4 weeks in a month. I can work a plane. So those timelines, that matters. And then, you know, we carved out part of our business to belong to mechanics, and we share financials, and I present to them like our shareholders, so that they're so engaged with what's going on in the business. They know exactly my point of view is aligned with theirs. And that's the way we wanted to conquer it. And it's helped us with recruiting, because now mechanics love it. They get to have feedback. They get to tell me what they want in the business. And I just build it through the mechanic side. That's all I'm doing. And that's the MRO I wanted as an operator that I couldn't find, that I'm trying to recreate. But a lot of it is because I just wanted to do it different because of how things were going. I think that maturity needs to happen in the business segment. Someone's going to do it. So that's what we're trying to do.
I think that's awesome. You know, and one of the things that I'd written to Chris originally when we talked about doing this show together is I've shared this point with a large MRO recently is, you know, I get that we're all vying for top tier talent. And I think what you said is exactly right. You can't solve it long term with money, right? Sure, that'll get a few people to come in for a little while, but it's not the sticky stuff, right? I think, you know, what we see is the opposite of what you described, Suresh. We see at certain shops where, you know, they recognize they have a workforce shortage. The capacity's through the roof. They build this new big opulent hangar, you know, to go with the rest of their, now they have to staff it, right? So they go out and they start hiring folks, which is great. And they're giving entry-level technicians a chance by bringing them into these organizations that, you know, many perceive are top tier. The problem is they hire them, they bring them in, they literally throw them on your airplane as the owner operator with very little to no training, and it's sink or swim. And, you know, there was a time in my career where you absolutely had to have either the DOM or a maintenance technician or a consultant babysit every project through the MRO. The entire time somebody was on your plane, you had to have somebody there. And there was a point, you know, like pre-COVID, where the industry had kind of policed itself. You could drop off your plane. You could make sure you did a thorough input meeting. You could come back at a couple of critical path points if you needed to, and then be there for the week of delivery. And now we're finding it at OEMs, at the service centers of all sizes and shapes, that we have to have somebody there pretty much the entire time the airplane is there, again, because of this talent gap and the lack of training that, in my opinion, the lack of training is happening. You know, we just delivered an airplane a few weeks ago where we closed on it. You know, we went in at post pre-buy, walked around the airplane, looked great. We were only a few days late, but that's the way pre-buys go. You can't really script it perfectly. Got through the whole deal. down to the next morning to fly it to closing and found an issue on the airplane where somebody had put a stand up against it, right? And trying to clean it up. And, you know, you trace it back and it was somebody who just didn't know, and nobody was taking the time to, you know, explain to folks, you know, look, this airplane's done. We need to be hands off. We need to make sure it's ready to go. And there's just no self-policing. You have to have somebody right now, like, looking after the machine almost the entire time it's at the shop. And that's just unfortunate.
I think that's a big trust issue with transparency. So, you know, people ask, because we tend to market differently. We don't employ pure sales positions. We have technical sales folks that have AMP licenses that go talk to customers for us. So folks that can actually do the work are the ones talking to our customers as we grow. But the biggest thing in our marketing is we want the mechanic to be the face of the business, not me, not anyone else. And so, and for me, it's the more customers that can meet our mechanic team, the more comfortable they are with not having to police us, because they're not just taking my word for the experience we have. We have like headshots of all of them, how much experience they have. Because we're a new company, a lot of folks may have known some of us in the industry, but they got to really trust the team we built and what they're doing on their aircraft, because they may be leaving one problem, but they don't want to create another or have any quality issues. So a new MRO can be scary for a lot. So the way we've conquered that is I'm like, come meet the team. You know, we're moving into a brand new 40,000 square foot facility, so it looks professional and sharp, but meet the people, see them smiling, they're having fun, go talk to them without me around. And so even when like our news stations and MRO magazines come to do little media things about us, I go talk to the mechanics, because if they can shine, I really think we'll win, because people will be so comfortable with the talent that I say we're building is actually here.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sorry, Nathan, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
I guess, Suresh, for this, how do you keep this momentum going? And I guess what's the kind of long-term plan to be able to pull this off and I guess show the industry that it's possible to do? And what impact were you hoping that will have on the industry as a whole?
Well, I'm hoping to not be self-righteous when I preach about these things, right? Like when we started the business, and I think we already are proof of concept. You know, before we opened, I had investors and people, their biggest concern, number one concern was, how are you going to recruit talent to the Dallas-Fort Worth area when everyone else is recruiting the same exact talent and you're a new company? That's hard. And I was worried too. But, you know, when we came out with our values about what we're trying to do by the mechanic and the fact that the business was started for the mechanic, that's what we're changing in maintenance. Recruiting has become our number one strength and still remains everyone else's biggest challenge. We can recruit good mechanics relatively easy. I think the biggest thing is when we built our leadership team here, I brought people I've worked with before, from our HR director to our GM, like people that really align with what we're trying to do here, not just, you know, who wanted a job. Like really, sure. I would say, you know, commitment over compliance. They're committed to what we're trying to build. That for us, like when the team came together, the initial leadership team, they started recruiting and I was nervous. I was shocked how much awesome talent they've already recruited. And so now as we grow, as we get into go into a new building and try to get to 50 mechanics and hopefully 100 after that, I'm not worried about the recruiting or the retention, because we were fortunate enough to be a clean slate repair station. So the things I wanted to address, we always have feedback loops from our team to tell us what they want in the business. Because, you know, day one, everyone's happy. But, you know, every couple months, I got to make sure I keep listening to our employees. I want them to tell us what we suck at doing. And if I keep working on it, I can retain the good talent we've recruited. So I think that's what I want to do at Jet MRO. But I want, you know, we share what we're doing for others. Like, we want to scale this business pretty large in Dallas. We already bought a component repair station in Miami. So we'll grow there in South Florida. You know, I'm hoping the industry listens, especially in other geographical areas, and changes how they treat mechanics to fix this issue. If they do that, it's not just me affecting, you know, the handful of folks we recruit to Jets MRO. It's changing how other leaders are viewing their staff. Because I've heard over the years, even when I was an operator and I talked to MRO presidents, a lot of complaints about the staff and MRO staff almost like it was adversarial. And I never understood why management and the folks doing the hard work weren't on the same side instead of on two opposite sides. And I just think some of it's the old school mentality in aviation that hasn't progressed or changed. It's kind of, it's keeping them separate. And so I'm hoping the things I'm doing just get them to think a little bit about, man, we do have this turnover issue when they look, and a lot of them sometimes don't look, but then they change how they do stuff with their team. And if I do that, then that's an awesome effect with as many people as possible, which is great. And at Jets MRO, the belief is if I execute, have an awesome team and they do well, then the business will do well. You know, the byproduct will be a successful business if I focus on the people first.
Yep.
And how do you facilitate that feedback?
Multiple ways. So we actually have like written processes. Again, we're fortunate. We got to clean slate this. So we said we're not opening our doors and touching a plane till we get these things right, whether it's our operational process, our HR process, everything, all in writing from day one. You know, most companies who've been in business 20 years don't have a lot of this stuff in writing. We got everything in writing. Even through our customer communication is all templated and writing. And basically we wrote it because a lot of us came from being operators the way we wanted to see when we were customers to the MROs. And so this is what I know is that we have an operator's point of view. And so it was beneficial because we started from scratch. But the way we do it is, you know, once a month I present to all my employees like shareholders, and they have the opportunity to ask questions. You know, if I do a good job of making sure they feel comfortable, they ask some hard questions in front of other people. You know, why do we lose money that month? Well, what's this? What's that? They actually ask hard questions. You know, why did we have this salesperson and try this? It didn't work. Or why have we moved into our new building? And then we have a process where I call it reverse mentorship, where I go meet with frontline folks, not to talk about what they don't like about their manager or anything like that. But it's a process that keeps me connected to their front line, not just poking, but it's actually a monthly process where I connect with different folks. They teach me about their job. And during that process, I learn a lot about what I could do better for the team. And then with their managers, they're required to do check-ins every so often that are formal. They document them about what does the employee want to get to goal-wise? What don't they like? What could do better? And then our HR director checks with them separately. So you have 4 to 5 feedback mechanisms along with your traditional surveys and 360 reviews. So that's 7 or 8 different mechanisms that, from my mind, should allow us to always get feedback before it's too late and have the opportunity to do something about it. And that's what I always want the opportunity to do, is take that feedback and go do something about it, or address it in all team meetings if I can't. Like the other day, some of our mechanics were frankly upset that I didn't buy this piece of a big mule, $60,000 mule. And I told them straight up, I invested that money in a person, couldn't afford the mule, so we're going to have to go borrow it this time. This is our first month. And they appreciated the honesty, understood why I did it. And those are conversations I want to have with them. So they don't just think things are happening without understanding why.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, you know, I think you're spot on, Suresh. It's so important for people to understand the why. And I don't care if it's working in an MRO, selling jets, selling software, working in healthcare. It doesn't matter. People have to understand the why if you want them to be committed to your process. So I applaud you guys for doing that. You know, we talk about transparency, Chris, and we started off in my mind when I was thinking about what we were going to talk about today. I was going to talk about, you know, the bait and switch on quoting and other things. But I got to tell you, the more this conversation has evolved today, the more I find that it's and I'm refreshed to hear Suresh's perspective and how important it is about the people, right? It's always all about the people. And it is so true that, you know, if you take care of your team, all the rest of it will follow. And I feel, you know, just as I said before, I'm about the relationship, whether that's with my employee or my customer, or with my supplier or service provider, as a case of an MRO. Because if we really focus on winning the relationships, all the rest of the stuff that everybody gets so wrapped up about, and look, we're all in it to make money, right? I mean, we don't do this because for some noble cause. At the end of the day, we're in it to make money and provide a good life and leave a good legacy, right? That's why we do what we do generally. But I think, you know, it's just so good that, Suresh, that you guys are focusing on your team members and focusing on those relationships with them, because that is ultimately what, I mean, your customer is never going to have a better experience than your employee, period. And so as leaders, it's our number one job to make sure our customer, our employees' experience is excellent, because they can't provide an experience any better than the one they're having. They're having a shitty day, the customer's gonna have a shitty day.
Our employees are the customer experience, right? Like, I'm not fixing the plane. I'll be the first to tell you, I'm not on the wing doing inspections and fixing the plane. So our product is the mechanic. And so I wrote something on, and it stays with me now, and I recently heard it. It's commitment versus compliance. If I can create a culture of commitment, and not just folks that come to work to be compliant, that will set us apart. And so I always think about, how do I foster commitment? And that's a hard people question, and it's a hard answer. I'm not saying what I'm doing is 100% right, but I'm trying things, and if they don't work, great, but I'm going to try some different things that don't work.
But look, I think you're right on, because in my view is in the years of trying to establish things and get people all pulling on the wagon in the same direction, right? If you make it their idea, right? And what you're doing, right? You've made your technicians co-owners, right? You've made your technicians co-champions, co-marketers, co-salespeople, right? They're writing the script. So it's not hard to get people to follow the script if they helped write it, right? It's difficult to deviate if you made the rule, right? So I just think I think you're on to, you have all the right things going in the right direction. It's time now, right? That's the one thing you can't control.
Chris, I like the Nathan's mentioned the bait and switch quote. Hopefully we can get into that, because that's a term I've learned a lot about this year, the bait and switch quote.
Yeah. So
let's for do me, it. Go
what
ahead.
What I mean by the bait and switch quote is, you know, I always like to take my quotes. Let's say I'm getting a C check quoted on a Falcon, right? I always like to take that, the one from the OEM, and then the one from my MROs that have chosen to bid the work, and line up as, and you have to go. You have to dissect these things and break them down, because there's no standard, right? And that's part of the secret sauce. So some, you know, MROs have it structured in a way because it flows with their work order system better. Some have it structured in a way because they don't necessarily want you to line it up against some of the others, I believe, and define some of the things, right? Some have it lined up in a way that makes it look like, hey, it's only going to cost me, I don't know, $100,000 for this inspection, where everybody else starts showing 140, and you start having to ask, why, right? And you've got to read all the fine print and figure out that, you know, there's $15,000 for a consumable charge here. And you're going to pay that no matter what, right? But it's in the fine print. We didn't put it up top line, right? You find that there's all these different fees baked in, and that interior access isn't included, but we know we have to take the interior out to do these 15 items that were quoted. I just, that's what I mean by a bait and switch quote. I see them all the time. And you know, if you're price shopping in maintenance, you're going to get burned, because you're going to sign a quote that may be 20 or 30,000 less than the guy who quoted it all correctly. But you're going to pay more than that on the back end, because it's all T&M,
and you'll be late.
Amen.
So that's the biggest struggle I had with traditional sales. And look. Yeah. Sales folks, I do appreciate them. No problem against them. I just think they've been doing things a certain way for the last 20 years that needs to change. And it's the way they bid projects, and they try to cut the next MRO down or do negative sales to win bids. I've even heard sales folks just say, you know, discount this to get the plane here, and then we'll make our money. And I'm like, wow, how shitty is that, and untransparent and distrusting is that? Like, I couldn't believe it. And I was naive. And so when I started the MRO, you know, in my previous lives, I've either been an operator, or I've had like 4 or 5 big customers, and that's it. And so in this life, I'm trying to get a lot of customers, you know, fleet operators in. Mm-hmm. So I've had to go do something I haven't done in my career before, which is market to a lot more people. And so in doing that, I've entertained bringing traditional sales folks on, but again, it wasn't their fault. They've just been doing what they've been doing for 20 years. But holy crap, I could not believe the way they approached and how other people approach trying to win projects by cutting inspection costs, get the plane in to then make money on findings, or yep. just trying to be the cheapest to win, or saying this other MRO is really bad, negative sales, just something that's offensive to me because I love all the other MROs and try to have really good relationships. Yeah. But we ended up not going through with ever having traditional salespeople. We made a commitment because it wasn't aligned with what we wanted to do. And so now that's why I have production bid projects straight to the customer because they don't care about all the stuff. They're not incentivized to sell more. They want to get the plane in. They're incentivized to get a plane in, bid it right, to get it out on time and on budget. That's how I incentivize our team is on-time performance 7 days a week, not selling more. So it can be a dollar or a $5 project. All they care about is being accurate with what they're telling the customer. So that's how I've aligned production with the customer and cut out this kind of evil, I think, which is where the distrust starts is when you can't compare quotes and apples to apples. And you got to really figure out, do you trust the MRO it's going to when your plane goes there and no one's watching for them to keep things and manage your dollar and do what they say they're going to do. And 9 out of 10 times when I ask folks, and for us, 100% of our aircraft were late out of maintenance, whether it was the OEM or the big MROs, for whatever reason, there's always something, some uncontrollable magical excuse. Here I said, look, no excuse. Like, we're going to deliver on time. And you have until 5 days before the project to ask for more time if we approve an over above reason. Besides that, I'm driving on time performance. But it was shocking how just bad that process was. And hopefully we can change that by just being honest. Like, I just tell people what our rate is. We charge $122 an hour. And then I tell you how many hours this task is going to take. And that's what we charge you. And if we can make money being open and honest, and then we deliver that on time, I can grow the business, keep our folks happy, profit share with our employees. So I don't need to try to push every project to the maximum amount of revenue as possible. I rather have consistency and scale over profit margin. And so that means selling less and just being consistent.
Yeah, the service centers have kind of turned into Jiffy Lube, right? And so you know, back some of us, you know, that had cars back in the 90s or whatever, right? You'd go into Jiffy Lube and you go in for that $9.95 or $19.95 oil change. I know that's way cheap these days, so I'm dating myself. I changed my own stuff, right? I'm a maintenance guy. But anyway, you would go in for that $19.95 oil change only to come out, you know, having spent $50 because you changed a PCV valve. What the hell is that anyway, right? And you need a cabin air filter and you need all these things, right? And I think, Suresh, to your point, you know, there's a whole lot of, and I see this often, there's a major MRO who shall remain nameless, but got a quote recently and I called him. I'm like, man, you're 40% less than everybody else. How is that possible? Did you all miss a task? Did you not include, because when I typically have an RFP, right, because I've gotten burned enough that it includes some things in it, right? Like, I want you to give me not to exceeds. I'm willing to pay for that, right? But I need a not to exceed number and it needs to include access and things like that, right? Touch-up paint, things of this nature. So anyway, I get this quote. I call him, like, did you leave some of this off? He's like, oh, no. We're, you know, we've been working hard to get our flat rates down. But Suresh, to your point, the only way he can do that is by knowing that there's already going to be, you know, a certain dollar amount of squawks on the back end. It's just the math problem, right? It's just business. So, it's still happening today, and it's really frustrating that you're getting these bait and switch quotes.
Nathan, right? You have folks tied to selling more, right? Because they make more money,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
So how customer aligned can they be, and honest can they be when their own interests are to push the dollar amount as high as possible? If we could remove that, we could start building some trust in any business.
And look, I've got friends, you're right. And I've got friends who will call me up that are in sales and they'll call me. And I own a sales company, but a little different. But I've got MRO salespeople that'll call me up and say, hey, man, do you have anything I can quote this month? I just got to meet my number, right? And it's like, now, wait a minute. I mean, I find that That and the negative selling are the two most off-putting things when people are just let me quote it because I just got to meet my quota, right? And then, well, brand X, they're just, you're going to pay through the nose when you go there. I heard they damaged this or whatever. Those kind of things are crazy off-putting to me.
Like I refuse to play that game, especially with the
Yeah.
sales folks
Good for
refuse to
you.
play. Look, I'm a new company. I may not be right. Time will tell if, what I think can be better will work. And if I earn the customer and execute like I say I will, then we'll be fine. But like time will tell. Like I want to do all these things, but we're new. And so, but it was appalling to see the negative sales part too. It was actually disappointing because in my M&A days, and I still am friends and know a lot of these MROs. And even when I heard one say some bad stuff about our MRO, like they're new, they don't know what they're doing. You don't want to be the first plane in there. I was offended. I took it personal because, if I don't protect my team, that's my number one job. And if someone says something bad about them, I do take it personal. And it was unfortunate. I'm like, look, we'll never talk bad about the MRO. We're other MROs aren't bad. We're just trying to do things different. If you value that,
For sure.
come do business with us.
Man, I'm going to tell you something. If you don't take it personal, there's this whole thing my entire career and you're starting to see the shift of you can't take these things personal. It's just business. Well, let me tell you what, my business is personal to me, right? And I know it is to you, Suresh, just talking to you. So most of us, I know Chris's business is personal to him. I know many people he's worked with in the past, their business is personal to them. And you should take it personal, quite honestly. I mean, to say that you shouldn't, I think is just a misnomer. Look, everybody starts somewhere. And I think what's important for people to understand as they consider MROs is sure there's an experiential component that we all have to meet in order to ensure we're getting a product for our owners that they expect, right? And that they're paying for. But I think you can still get that by knowing what you're coming into, by working with like your team, Suresh, and establishing the guardrails collectively and agreeing to them as a team on what the event's going to be. And look, we're going to get behind for a variety of reasons. We're going to find a squawk. We're going to need a tool. We're going to break a tool. Things are going to happen. And I think what the industry has an opportunity to do is the minute we know that there's an issue, we need to tell the customer right then, right? Trying to manage the message or this messaging concept, that's really the DOM, the chief pilot, whoever brought you the business, that's their job to manage the message to the owner. It's not the MRO's job to craft the management of the, you need raw data out to these DOMs, right? And chief pilots that are managing these airplanes. They'll figure out how to package it up for their owners, however it needs to be, or they'll give it to them raw. Like I have certain clients, they just want the data, right? That there's corrosion under the floorboard. We have to fix it. It could take 4 months. We have no idea yet. We'll be back to you in a week, right? That's okay. I have others where, we need to be like, well, there could be an issue. You just have to know. And you guys at the MRO aren't going to know those end users like the DOMs or the chief pilots. So you just got to tell them right the minute you discover the issue so they can start working on it.
Well, Nathan, what's the challenge there from your perspective of getting delayed information or not getting this info or getting told the wrong information up front? Like what downstream impact does that have on you as you need to communicate with the owners?
Well, I mean, some of these folks that own our airplanes, right, that we're all talking about, they'll become frustrated and they'll automatically say, well, that shop, right? I've been down this road. Well, that shop, we're never going back there again. Well, we can only say that a few times, right? And then we're out of shops to go to, right? So, the emotional reaction that some of the owners will have to, being over budget or being late because of squawks or whatever the case may be, if the person that's responsible and is paid by that owner to manage these projects and manage the asset, it has all the facts and circumstances as soon as possible, then they can go and get in front of it. It's when we're supposed to deliver in the morning at 8 a.m. and you tell me, this afternoon at 5 p.m. that even though we're already at the hotel in your city to pick up our airplane, right, and we traveled across the country, now you're going to tell me at 5 p.m. that there's no way. Not only is there no way, we're like a week and a half out, right? And this is the first we've heard it. That's a problem, right? And that's where, as Suresh talked, this mistrust that's been developed, it's because of things like that and because of these bait and switch quotes is that people feel like, and the way I feel presently, generally in the MRO space, is I've got to have eyes on my project 24/7.
Chris, that's why I plugged the production in from our leads, our GM direct to the customer. We have fixed updates, obviously our exports with visuals about hours worked, and it's a professional update. It's what I want as an operator, and it's fixed certain days of the week, and it's the good and bad straight from production floor, no one in between. I think I would never veer away from that concept.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, you got
that's awesome.
You guys are executing it beautifully, man. It's cool to see, and it was cool to learn about the SOPs that you guys have, and got to dig into some of those documents that you sent over. So, I'm looking forward to seeing how we can continue to make that, I guess, even more transparent than it is and as fluid as possible. Guys, before we wrap up, and I feel like we could probably do another one or two of these, is there anything else that we should touch on for this subject?
No, I think we've preached enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have preached enough. I do think that one of the things that, you know, the industry does need to collectively wrap their head around is, you know, again, we're all in this. We all have a boss, right? Somewhere down the line, we have a shareholder, we have an investor, whatever, right? And we have to honor that. And I think one of the things that struck me when Suresh was telling his story about how they have structured their MRO business versus how my experience has been recently with some others is that all those people and the people being Suresh, yourself, and then these other MROs are working to please their shareholders, the folks behind the curtain, whether they're dressing their business up to sell it or not, they're all managing to it. I think the difference is, Suresh, you've made your shareholder a different person, right? So whereas maybe, MROX out there, I almost said a name, but MROX out there, right, that's pretty large and is owned by some PE, is you know, focused on satisfying their private equity group, as opposed to you're focused on satisfying the technicians on your floor. And you're still, by doing that, you're still saying focused on the airplane, where these other folks are focused on, you know, the business of the business and not what brought the business to be and what keeps the business running, which are the technicians. I think that's really interesting.
It is. And it's interesting that you bring it up. And I've seen that shift happen where the focus goes from being either the employee or, you know, the overall mission in that case is like, take care of the customer. We need to take care of the customer. And the main focus as an organization is taking care of the customer by taking care of employees. And I've seen that shift. And the main customer that you shift your focus to when it becomes the PE firm, or if it becomes somebody else that's not your actual customer, it's mind blowing how fast the degradation takes place, and just the downstream effects of that, and losing sight of what the goal actually is. It's incredibly destabilizing to a company. Yeah. But
you can see it in the restaurant space, right? I mean, forget what we all do, right? But you can see it in the restaurant space, right? As some of these brands get bought by, I'll pick on one, from Suresh, being that I'm originally from the Dallas area, I'll pick on Whataburger, right? So when Whataburger was a Whataburger I grew up with, right, it's a totally different experience in terms of the food quality, the service, and everything else. And I'm not saying it's bad now, but it's definitely not like it was 10 years ago. And oh, by the way, 10 years ago, they were bought by a PE group, right? The family sold the business, and good for them. But still, Chris, to your point, the focus has shifted.
Yep.
Don't ruin Whataburger for me. I love Whataburger, but
man, me too. Taquitos are the bomb.
So, Chris, I do a lot of M&A advising because we do acquisition, but I also advise some private equity groups, and they're not all bad. They're all different.
No,
but there are a lot of private equity groups that when they acquire a business, whether it's an aviation maintenance or operations, and I've been through a lot of these transitions, who they are and their values will transcend through the company and will change it. And I've seen, unfortunately, we know a lot about the bad because the good, you just don't hear about it because the business keeps doing well.
That's right. Yeah.
The bad is being too bottom line focused. People get mad. They leave. It's happening a lot, whether it's the FBO side, the maintenance side, the operations side. Not all private equity groups are the same. And a lot of them have done a lot of acquisitions in our space. There's a lot of consolidation going on. And I've seen them really hurt the operational business, which really detracts from their bottom goal anyway of returning value to the shareholder. But it's happening over and over. But therein lies the opportunity. If we can do things right, stay privately owned, have the right board and shareholders, and really focus on our values, and don't forget why we started the business, the why, keep reminding everyone the why, keep the culture up. I think as other businesses lose who they are, there's just opportunities for us to scale and win on a larger scale, which is what we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I hope that I hope that while some people are forgetting where they're supposed to be going, I'm hoping that this actually gives like a roadmap for some of the younger people that are coming in and starting up these AMP shops and all that stuff, and these smaller businesses can kind of take that similar approach. So we'll see how it shakes out. Just before we wrap up, Jets MRO, you guys are going to be at the NBAA at the West Hall booth 1201. EBIS will be at the West Hall booth 2621. We're in the Tron Air booth. Nathan, I know you won't be there, but Lee will be there representing
Lee
Thoroughbred.
Lee Brewster will represent Thoroughbred. She'll be cruising the floor, and I know she's planning to see Charech. And I know, Chris, you'll get to see Lee whether you're planned on it or not. She's not going to let you sneak out without saying
that. Nathan, tell her we'll be in a big pink booth. Most like what I like to do, which is go against the norm. Aviation can be boring, so our favorite colors are pink and blue. So you'll see a big pink booth. Custom Jordan shoes with our logo on it, and just like my shirt, you won't be able to miss us.
Awesome.
Well, guys, anything else you want to touch on before we wrap it up?
Not
Chris,
here.
I just appreciate the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.